Welcome to Commerce Committee, everyone. Members, I'd like to call the meeting to order. Please silence all electronic devices. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Anglia.
Here.
Vice Chair Drake. Republican Committee Whip McFarland.
Here.
Ranking Democratic Member Silvers. Representatives Barnaby.
Here.
Clemens.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
DeSegli.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Geller. Grieco.
Here.
Haig.
Here.
Latvala.
Here.
Maggard.
Here.
McClure. Here. Nixon. Omfroy. Plakin. Placencia.
Here.
Rommel.
Here.
Schoaf is excused. Thompson. Tomko.
Here.
Wilhite.
Members, let the record reflect that a quorum is present. Members, we're going to hear four bills today. I'm assuming everybody in the room is not here for Chair Grawl's airport funding bill. So we're going to start off with the two smaller bills first and then hit the data privacy bill. Rep. Grawl, you are recognized to introduce House Bill 631 regarding airport funding.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, when a general aviation airport begins to receive scheduled commercial airline service and subsequently exceeds 10,000 annual commercial passenger enplanements, the airport is classified as a primary commercial service airport by the FAA and FDOT. At that time, FDOT funding eligibility is reduced from 80% to 50%. This bill would raise the number of enplanements to 100,000 before funding eligibility is reduced from 80% to 50%. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Having explained the bill, members, any questions to the bill sponsor? Any questions? Showing none. Are there any public testimony on your bill? Showing no public testimony. Members, we in debate. In debate on the bill before, show no debate. You're recognized to close.
Wave close.
Having wave close, question now occurs on House Bill 631. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Anglia.
Yes.
Vice Chair Drake. Republican Committee Whip McFarland. Ranking Democratic Member Silvers. Representatives Barnaby.
Yes.
Clemens.
Yes.
Daly.
Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Geller? Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Nixon? Omfroy? Plakin? Placencia?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Schoaf is excused. Thompson? Tomko? Wilhite?
Yes. The bill passes, sir.
Members, by your vote, show that House Bill 631 is reported favorably. All right, members, we're going to go straight into House Bill 9 by Rep. McFarland regarding data privacy. Rep, I understand that you have a strike-all amendment. Amendment 1, barcode 918639. Members, without objection, we are going to adopt the strike all. And Rep. McFarland, you are going to, if you can, please introduce the bill and the differences between the strike all and the underlying bill. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, HB 9 is the consumer data privacy that we all passed off the House floor last session. In the off-season, we've made significant improvements to that bill, and we've improved it even more. And in the strike-all amendment, we make a number of changes to the language to clarify our intent and be more specific. It does not change the underlying purpose of the overall bill. I'll call out the biggest changes that are in the strike-all. We have aligned the exceptions in the section about a right to delete with the right to correct to when a controller retention schedule for data. We added guidance and a list of factors for courts to consider when determining the amount of damages due in a private right of action. And we increase the age that would be required for an opt-in of a minor to sell or share their data. That is the strike-all amendment. If I could just speak to the importance of this overall bill. You know, this morning, as I was getting ready to come in, I got a pop-up on my phone that let me know it was probably time to leave the house if I wanted to make it to my first appointment on time because there was light traffic on my route. I stopped and grabbed a cup of coffee, and I swiped my credit card in a payment processor app. And then as I kept driving, on my car's navigation system, it popped up to me the major retailers and brands that were along the road. And as I was sitting in my office, my watch told me it was time to stand up because I had been sitting for a little bit too long. And I mention all these things to point out that virtually everything we do involves us handing over data about ourselves. Some of it we hand over willingly, and sometimes it's a company surreptitiously collecting those things about us. And don't get me wrong, there's a tremendous amount of convenience in these things. I might have been late this morning, for example. But given that there's so much data about me and about each of us out there, I think it's time to put some Florida sunlight on how our personal data is being used. Yes, that data is innocuous and even beneficial when used for the purpose that I gave it, and this bill does not impact that. But when our data is put up for sale to the highest bidder for digital advertising or manipulation, I want to have a say in who can buy that information. And in that spirit, this bill applies only to companies who sell or share consumers' data for a purpose incidental to the reason why that consumer gave it to him. It establishes three major rights to digital privacy. It gives the consumer the right to know what information a company collects about them. It gives the consumer the right to delete or correct information that a company has about them. And it gives the consumer the right to opt out of their information being sold or shared to a third party for profit. To enforce these rights, the bill gives the Attorney General enforcement power under Florida's Deceptive and Unfair Trade Practices Act. But it also allows for a private cause of action against businesses who continue to sell personal information after a consumer opts out or fails to delete or correct personal information after being asked to do so. That is the bill and the strike all together, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, first I want to back up. I think I may have misspoken when I said without objection, we're going to adopt the strike all. So strike that without objection. We're going to take up the strike all. So the strike all is not adopted. We are on the strike all right now. Rep. McFarland has just introduced the strike all and explained the strike all and the differences between the strike all and the underlying bill. Having said that, are there questions from the members on the strike all? Rep. Grieco, in question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for bringing this bill, which I am supportive of. And my question would be for those who are making arguments that this bill will put an undue burden or will have great negative impacts on small businesses, how would you address that concern?
Rep. McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Grieco, for that question, because it's a really important one and a lot of what we heard last session and over the summer. This bill does not apply to small businesses that has a revenue under $50 million. It does not apply to businesses that only use consumers' personal information for marketing their own products or services. It does not impact loyalty programs. It doesn't touch companies that are already regulated under federal data protections like Grand Leach Bliley and the Fair Credit Reporting Act. It does not cover businesses that only sell or share de-identified or aggregate anonymous data. And it does not impact businesses that only sell or share publicly available information.
Rep. McClure, questions.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Rep. McFarland, and thanks for our conversations. Just a real simple question here, I think. I just want to make sure I understand this. So if a business is not going to sell that information, there is no cause of action that comes from this bill. If they're using it for their own marketing purposes, to grow their own business, That is okay within the strike all, but if they step out of that and sell it to a third party and didn't listen to their customers to get out, then we've got a problem, we've got a cause of action. Am I understanding that right?
Rep. McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You guys are getting right, I think, at the most controversial part of this bill and why there are so many people here today. If you are a business and you are not selling your customers' data as a packet that you can make profit off of to a third-party advertiser, this bill does not apply to you. If you are doing that, Still, we're not saying that's wrong. We're just saying you need to give the Floridian a little more control over their own information. And those are the three rights that I listed, that you need to be able to ask the business what information they have about you. You need to be able to ask them to delete it or correct it and opt out of them profiting off of you.
Rep. Rommel.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative, thank you for bringing this bill. We all know we need to help protect all the Floridians that a little bit better. I have a couple of questions. I know you said it applies to businesses that do more than $50 million a year globally. How many businesses would that affect in Florida that actually do more than $50 million annually?
Rep. McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I probably should have been more specific about the businesses that it applies to. I listed who it doesn't apply to. It does apply to businesses who make over 50, two of the following three things: over 50 million in revenue, over 50% of that revenue comes from the proceeds of selling or sharing personal data, and then three, they have over 50,000 points of data about a Floridian, devices or people or households. So if you meet two out of those three things, this bill applies to you.
Chair, I have a couple other
follow-up.
Thank you. I know you mentioned getting your coffee this morning, and probably the reason you got that pop-up ad was because of geofencing. You know, when you're in a certain radius of whatever, does this apply to companies that gather data through geofencing because you have a location service on that allowing that information to be extracted from your phone?
Rep. McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll use the example of coffee because that's what I gave in the open. If Lucky Goat is sending me an ad about Lucky Goat coffee using geofencing or whatever technology exists out there, that is okay because it is their own product or service. And they are advertising to me, I'm assuming, based off of information that I have given them through my relationship with Lucky Goat Coffee. If they were to buy that from someone else, if they were to buy packets of data about me, perhaps to indicate my income level or that I have a small baby and I didn't sleep, I'm likely to have not slept last night, so they should, you know, send me an ad for a red eye coffee. That's when we start to step over the line because someone has profited off of what they know about me outside of the relationship of the normal business to customer relationship. And sorry, if I may, Mr. Chair, I think I forgot to answer how many companies in Florida this bill would apply to. I've talked to many companies last session and the off session and in these 5 weeks of session, and I haven't found too many companies that tell me that they sell or profit off of data. So I'm not sure of a number.
Some other data that's used, you know, for Floridians is actually provided from different state agencies. Is there any way in this bill that we can figure out a way to protect people's private information from of our state agencies?
Rep. McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. This bill, I mentioned, it does not cover information that is publicly available. So as politicians, we all spend a lot of time looking at our voters. That is publicly available information in the state of Florida. But we do have another excellent bill moving through the Florida House this session that deals with data when it comes to a municipality or a government entity. Representative G. Lombardo is the sponsor of that proposed committee bill.
Just a couple more, sir. In your bill, you said there is a cure process. I haven't seen the strike call, but there's a cure process. So if I'm a widget sales, you know, company and somehow somebody files a complaint, they said they didn't want their information out, somehow it did it. What's the cure process now to avoid, I guess, to avoid litigation and cure the problem?
Rep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you are a consumer who has asked a company to delete your information or correct it or you've opted out, that company has 45 days to respond to the request. They can extend that for another 45 days if they need more time to figure out how to claw to make that change in their architecture. If the consumer wants to seek redress through the Attorney General can grant a 45-day period of curing. So you have 90, a business has 90 days to respond to the customer. I understand that once you threaten to, you know, go ask mom or dad to enforce for you, the stakes raise a little bit. The Attorney General can grant 45 additional days to make that correction. If a consumer is seeking redress and to claim their rights in a private court of law, in a personal court of law, then there is no right to cure currently. But again, they already have 90 days. The company would already have 90 days, which in the world of data
is. Just one quick follow-up then. I know in the bill you have, we cap damages for the plaintiff, correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's right, Representative Rommel. Damages, fines and fees that are brought by the Attorney General are on line 100 to 750. In a private cause of action, the damages are capped between $100 and $750 per incident or per consumer.
And just the last thing, and I probably know the answer, make sure. I know you're capping the damages from the plaintiff, and since Florida just got off the judicial hellhole list from the Americans for Tort Reform, are we considering capping attorney fees?
Rep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, like you, Chair Representative Rommel, do not love those lists that put Florida in the top five most litigious states in the country. If I think that there is a way that we can rein in some of the potential for frivolous suits, I am very open to doing so. And I think most of the people on the other side of the podium would agree that I have been very willing to make amendments. I could have read off 15 amendments today, rather than doing a strike all. But yes, I'm very open to reining that in.
Members, Gelsaurus, you have questions? You good? Rep. Thompson, any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I want to make sure that I understand that this applies only to for-profit entities and not to, let's say, an agency that might provide voter registration information.
First response.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's exactly right. This applies to a business that has a Florida customer. It does not get into government entities. There's some other legislation in the House that touches on that, but not this bill.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Any further questions? Okay, showing none, we do have some public testimony on the strike all. So before anyone comes up, we have Alfred Sicali, Jennifer Green, and Thomas Koval. If you guys are okay, since the strike all is going to be the main bill, what we'll do is we'll wait for adoption of the strike all before we call you guys up. Okay? Okay, so no public testimony. Members, we are in the debate on the strike all. Okay, showing no debate. You're recognized to close on the strike all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, as I alluded to, we have the staff of the Commerce Committee, members throughout this body, and our industry counterparts have given a tremendous amount of input and work into this bill. It is a big bill. We do not take that lightly, which is why we are bringing, I think, a very productive strike all today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, having closed on the strike all, members, all in favor of adoption of the strike all, barcode 918639, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, no. Show the strike all adopted. Members, we are back on the bill as amended. We're going to go straight into public testimony on the bill as amended. Okay, Thomas Koval, Florida Insurance Council. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Excuse me. Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. And I wanted to thank Representative McFarland, who's been more than willing to listen to our whining, griping, or suggestions. But in any event, I'm here to talk about a couple of things. And I represent the Florida Insurance Council, We have about 300 insurance company members, and obviously very interested in this bill. We're opposed to the bill at this point based on the drafting of a few provisions, particularly the threshold provision, which is in the definition of controller. We've passed on our suggestions, and Representative McFarland has been happy to entertain them. We also believe that as a policy decision, a policy issue, we think the private right of action is not something that is conducive to, and it could be a tool to for abuse in this particular area, as we see in other areas where there are one-way attorney's fees. But let me speak to the one issue that I think is most important for our members, and that is the threshold. I call it the threshold. It's in the definition of controller. And Representative McFarland did talk about it, and I believe, and I think the intention is to make sure that you're not including companies that don't engage in the business of selling and sharing data, private information, for monetary gain. I think that's probably the goal, and I think that I've heard today that that is kind of the goal of what this bill wants to do. Obviously, we as an insurance industry gather a lot of information. We don't sell data. But let me suggest to you that under the threshold right now, which is in the definition of controller, you only, as Representative McFarland said, you only have to have two of the three. The third one is 50% of your revenue comes from the sale. I'm paraphrasing, but it's 50% of your revenue comes from the sale, sharing, whatever, of data. So theoretically, you could not sell or generate any revenue off of sale. Excuse me. In other words, you could meet the first two and not earn a penny off of sale of the revenue, because it deals with 100,000 consumer information. The second one is 50,000 devices. But the third one, we believe, is really the important one to catch in that controller definition, the people who we believe are the target or the people who should be covered by this bill. And that would be the people who are in the business of selling and generating revenue off the sale and sharing of personal information. And so we think that's a really key part to this bill, because it really determines who is into that costly compliance, that ongoing compliance issue, and the litigation potentially that will come out of this particular bill. So I'd also just mention, like I said, there's a general opposition to the private right of action. There are some other tweaks that probably others will deal with here today. For example, tweaks to the Graham-Leach-Bliley exception, et cetera. So we just don't think that the size of the data as it is in the first two of those three requirements should be the measure, but rather the generation of revenue off of those, off the sale, sharing, receiving of the data. And I just would like to say one last thing. It is a complicated bill. Representative McFarland, I want to call her Lieutenant Commander McFarland, but in any event, she's done a great job. It's a tough issue, but it's so complex that there are so many definitions and there's so many issues that may not really fit neatly together in terms of how and A, are you covered, and B, how you comply. And that's our position on the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Alfred Cycli. Did I pronounce that correctly? Awesome. I rock. You're recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you. And thank you to Representative McFarland, who's been wonderful to work with through this whole process, very open and always listening to our feedback. I am an attorney who focuses 100% of my practice on counseling clients on how to comply with these different privacy laws. I want to talk to you about, first, the compliance costs that are associated with these kind of laws. Number one, you're looking at legal fees to understand the bill's lengthy requirements. That's going to be $25,000 to $100,000 a year, probably. Next, you need to have a data inventory. This is the thing that's used that you have to develop so you figure out what personal information are we collecting about people, Where do we get it from? Who do we share it with? What are we doing with that? That is something that hiring a vendor to put that together will cost you at least $50,000 to $100,000. Then you have to keep it updated over time every year because those practices change. You need to hire a vendor to implement a process to respond to consumer requests. So when Al sends his request to delete to Company A can immediately work on that request, process it electronically, and make sure that information is deleted. It's not as simple as sort of pushing a button and magically everything that about Al that is in the company system disappears. That process in itself can take $50,000 to $75,000, and oftentimes you're looking at an additional $75,000 to subscribe to a service that will let you do that sort of thing. You also need to hire a web design firm to build in the required do not sell my personal information link on your website. And it's not just a matter of putting that link on your website. There needs to be something that happens so that when Al visits Company A's website and clicks on it, there's all this back-end stuff that happens, and I have some choices, and then the company is able to understand what Al wants to do. That's going to be at least an additional $10,000 to $25,000. You have employee training requirements so that whoever is going to be responding to these requests from consumers knows how to do that the right way. There are many companies that hire dedicated staff whose only job is to deal with these sorts of requests. So you're looking at least an additional $15,000 to $75,000 for that. And then finally, you have the cost of hiring a cybersecurity firm to perform an assessment. Because one of the things the bill requires is that you adopt reasonable security measures to protect personal information. Well, what does that mean to most businesses that aren't really in this industry? The cost of doing that is going to be $50,000 to $150,000 easily, and that's without the cost of the remediation recommendations that that cybersecurity firm tells you to make as a result of its assessment. So you're looking at $300,000 to $700,000 annually. These are not costs that only happen once and you're done. This is going to be a lot for businesses to convey, to deal with. And I'm not here to sort of tell you to vote one way or the other. I'm just telling you what my personal experience is seeing these invoices. There are some that will feel like these are appropriate expenses that businesses should incur given what they do. And there are others that will say this is not the time to be essentially putting a $300,000 to $750,000 annual tax on small to mid-sized businesses to which this law would apply. Next, I want to just point out the operational challenge, because one of the things the law requires is the 48-hour time period for businesses to implement any opt-out requests that they receive. That's really difficult. So if Al sends his request to delete to certain companies, then that company has to stop selling my information. That company has 48 hours to implement that request. That's a really quick turnaround. And if you're a mid-sized business, how do you respond within 48 hours to that kind of a request? So I would suggest perhaps considering a lengthier period if you move forward with that provision. There's also a provision in there that says that if a company receives via a browser a request to opt out, then the company has to honor that request. Let me explain that. If you use Safari, for example, as your web browser, you can set up in your Safari web browser some settings so that when you go to a website, it tells that website, I don't want you to collect my stuff, right? So what this bill says is if you go to Company A's website and you have those settings in your browser that you set, that company has to recognize those settings. But the reality is most companies don't see that sort of stuff. It's small code that, you know, maybe big, sophisticated companies know how to respond to that, but most small and mid-sized companies that easily make $50 million a year don't really see that sort of thing. And then lastly, the private right of action. We are dealing, unfortunately, in Florida with a heavy plaintiff's bar that we have professional plaintiffs that are out there that take advantage of these statutory damage provisions that allow you to sue for a certain amount of money. It's easy for them because they don't have to prove the hardest thing, which is that they were actually injured by the thing that was the violation. There are two easy ways to fix this potential violation, this potential problem here with this law. One is build in a right to cure. I believe somebody referenced it earlier in the question of what is the right to cure here? And there isn't one for the private right of action. But California has one, for example. And what you would do is say to a business or say to the plaintiff, before you can sue that business because they didn't delete your stuff, you have to give them a right to cure. And they have 30 days to fix that. And if they didn't fix that, go ahead, sue them. But give them a chance to fix it, because businesses make mistakes. They're humans. They're run by humans at the end of the day. That seems a pretty reasonable approach. And the other thing that I would do is change the attorney's fees provision, because right now, plaintiffs get attorney's fees if they win, but the defendants don't. And you want one way to encourage or discourage frivolous lawsuits, it's to say to the plaintiff's bar or the plaintiff, hey, if you lose, you may end up having to pay the other side's attorney's fees. That seems fair and equal. And it's the same way that our leading consumer protection statute, the Florida Deceptive and Unfair Trade Practices Act, does it. It's the prevailing party that may be entitled to attorney's fees. Lastly, just on scope, there have been some rumors going around that this bill only applies to companies that generate more than 50% of their revenue from selling personal information. That is not true. That is one way in which you can qualify, but this law also applies to you if you collect 50,000 information about 50,000 individuals, plus your company makes more than $50 million a year, which is not that high. This bill applies to you. So I just want to clear that out. This is not a situation where this bill is only going to apply to large tech companies. This bill is going to apply to most day-to-day businesses in Florida. Thank you very much for your time.
Sir, real quick.
Sorry.
Before you ask the question, when you filled out your card here, you didn't put who you were representing. Can I ask you who you are?
I'm with the law firm of Shook, Hardy & Bacon. I chair the firm's privacy and cybersecurity practice, but I'm not representing anyone. Nobody's paying for my time here today. I'm not. Is that helpful? I don't know.
So are you representing yourself or you're representing the firm?
Yes, myself.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right.
It would have been easier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions, if you don't mind. Maybe you're reading a different bill than I am. Because the strike all says that if you don't collect the information from the members of the public, you're exempt from all of these things. So you disagree with that?
I do disagree, okay. Sir, respectfully.
You are recognized.
Oh, I apologize, Mr. Chair. I don't do this very often. I apologize, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to know how he disagrees with that.
Yes, I disagree. The bill applies anytime you collect personal information from 50,000 or more individuals, and if your business makes more than $50 million a year. And either you use that personal information for targeted advertising or anything else. Look at that Roman numeral 2 in the definition of controller. Anything else that's not one of those exceptions that's listed in the previous subsection.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
So I'm still more of a simpleton, and I never went to law school, but help me understand, if you collect the consumer's data and you sell that and make money, you can exempt yourself by not collecting the data or not selling the data of the private citizens, correct?
For response.
Mr. Chair, may I respond? Thank you. Representative, you don't need to sell the data after you've collected it in order for this bill to apply to you. If you look at the definition under that Roman numeral 2, the fact that you are collecting the personal information and that your business makes more than $50 million is enough if you are using it for targeted advertising or, again, anything else that is not an exception within the law. So, for example, if a business collects personal information and then uses it in order to market the products of another business that it works closely with, this bill applies. If your business, as many businesses do, purchases personal information about individuals in order to be able to market to them, this bill applies. If your business collects personal information and you don't even share it or sell it, you just use it to understand what your consumers are doing, technically under Roman numeral 2, this bill still applies the way it's written.
Follow up.
Last one, Mr. Chairman. I respectfully disagree with the counselor. I believe that the original bill did exactly what he says. I believe that the strike all under exemption G excludes all the things that you had just stated. So that's my last statement. Thank you, Mr.
Actually,
Chairman.
I'm going to piggyback on that question.
It takes
response. So lines 190 through 194, Roman numeral 2, says annually buys, receives, sells, or shares the personal information of 50,000 or more consumers, households, and devices for the purpose of targeting advertising in conjunction with third parties or for a purpose that is not listed under subsection 1.
That's right.
And you're saying that
That means if you are receiving 50,000 information about 50,000 or more, and you are using it either for targeted advertising or anything else that is not one of the exceptions that you just saw in the previous section, you know, there's A through Z. If you're using it for anything that is not one of those things, this bill applies to you.
Right, but it's saying that you're buying.
No, I don't know what the form. May I respond,
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, it doesn't say buy. It says it receives. It says annually buys, receives, sells, or shares.
Give me 1 second. Rep. Gellerin, questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So recognizing that there is room for some considerable statutory interpretation here and seeing that everybody up here on the dais is have left our black robes home today and probably can't rule on that point, is there some relatively simple fix to the problem that you're identifying of, you know, a couple words here or there, which would make sure that my colleague, Rep. Clemens, is right in his analysis of who would and wouldn't be covered?
I suppose it depends. I apologize, Mr. Chair. May I respond? Yes, thank you. It depends on what you want the purpose of the bill to be. If you want, for example, the purpose of the bill to just be limited to these big companies that make 50% or more of their revenue from selling people's stuff, just take out Roman numeral two and make it, you gotta be number one, you collect more than 50,000 individual stuff, and number three, you make more than 50% of your revenue from selling people's stuff. That's it. It's just taking out two and you're good. And then probably all these people go away too. But if the other way you could do it, if you didn't want to do, sorry, Representative, you want to ask a follow-up question? The other way you could do it is if you just made it so that number two applies only if you're using it for targeted advertisement, period. Take out the part at the end that says, or for any other reason not in the exceptions.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So granting that would work, if the sponsor or the committee or someone made that small change and did want to tweak it further by removing the catch-all, you could always add something to that A to Z and have a double A or double B if you wanted to be sure some other specific thing was covered. Is that correct?
For response.
Yes, Representative, you could do it that way, too.
All right. Any further questions? All right, showing none. Rep. McFarland, I'm sure you're going to help clarify that on the close. Well, on the close, we can do that. Thank you, sir. George Fehu, Institute of Legal Reform. You recognize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. George Fehu, here today representing the Institute for Legal Reform, which is a division of the U.S. Chamber. Today we're speaking in opposition of the bill, which we believe will subject businesses to onerous and abusive litigation tactics within Florida's already lawsuit-rich environment. To reduce the potential for this abuse, we have four main suggestions to share at this time. One, eliminate the private right of action entirely and explicitly state that the privacy violations may not be the basis for any private right of action. We believe private right of actions provide no enhanced consumer protection benefits, but they do impose heavy costs on legitimate businesses, and they deter innovation. Second, we suggest that you add language which clearly says that the Florida Attorney General is the exclusive enforcer of privacy violations. We believe that this strikes a good balance between consumer protection as well as an efficient process devoid of frivolous lawsuits. Third, we suggest giving businesses a 45-day right to cure all violations. Navigating laws like this is very tricky, and even well-intentioned organizations could make a misstep. It is contrary to everyone's interest the government, businesses, and consumers to punish willingly compliant parties for good faith missteps, which can be resolved without litigation. Fourth, there's a provision in the bill which voids contracts or agreements that waive or limit a consumer's right under this section. We suggest that you add language that says that particular section does not apply to arbitration, which has been proven to be a simpler, fairer, and faster way to solve disputes. We also have several other concerns over other areas of the bill, but there are others here to speak on those technical and compliance issues. And for, if I can just take a moment after that discussion, you know, I think what's clear here is what we're saying is there is going to be interpretation of the statute. As long as there's any gray area, we've already lost. The businesses have already lost. So even if you think your bill is just about, hey, if you're not selling this data, then you're in the clear. That's not the point. The point is, with all that's already in the bill, we will have already been hit by that lawsuit, right? And even the fear of that litigation and those judgments will cause the businesses to settle. And in many cases, again, what I said, these are legitimate businesses that are looking to comply. A great example is the TCPA, the solicitation, the national solicitation law, telephone solicitation law. In that case, you know, you might have had, if the requirement was somebody had to fill out a form for it to be a solicited callback from your company, what if a good faith business accidentally put the wrong last digit and called the wrong person, and now they're getting sued for attorney's fees? Those kinds of missteps and gotcha games are what we're talking about here. When we don't have everything perfectly lined up, it's not just what you intend with the bill on saying if you don't sell data, then you're in the clear. As long as there's any question there of fact and we get sued, we've already lost, and we believe businesses lost, and ultimately our consumers, shareholders, our staff in our companies, ultimately the public that we interact with, and really Florida with it. So with that, I close my comments, Chair.
Thank you. Jonathan Guarin, Florida Tax Watch. Wait. Okay. Jennifer Green, Expedia Group. Waiving in opposition, thank you. Carolyn Johnson, Florida Chamber of Commerce. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and Carolyn Johnson with the Florida Chamber of Commerce. First, I really want to emphasize that I have a ton of respect for Representative McFarland. She has been fantastic to work with, and we appreciate the amount of time that she has spent with us on this issue, and also the work over the summer to improve her bill. Unfortunately, we still have concerns with the bill as amended today. Mainly, our main concern is the private right of action as the enforcement mechanism and the impact that that will have on businesses when we already have a bottom five legal climate. We see over and over again cottage industries crop up because of a one-way attorney fee provision, and we're concerned that this bill will add to the amount of litigation that businesses might face, even if they're trying to comply with the law. Our second concern is related to the cost of compliance. For our member companies that do not already have to comply with other state privacy laws, this is a significant cost of compliance. And then for those that do have to already comply with other compliance other states, there's still a compliance cost as each regulations are different. We look forward to continuing to work with the bill sponsor. We do have several members that have expertise, and we want to continue to work on this complex issue as it moves forward. But respectfully, we ask you to oppose the bill today.
I have a quick question.
Yes.
Does somebody else have a question?
Well, I have a question.
Chair LaFalla.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here. Do you believe that businesses have the right to sell consumers and customers' data?
Full response.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I should add that we actually do believe that consumers should have a right to privacy, and we do believe that bad actors should be held accountable. Our concern, in addition to the ones that I've mentioned, is that this bill might impact those that this bill might impact more than just the bad actors. And again, that goes back to the private right of action, and as another speaker had previously mentioned, once a lawsuit has been filed, they've already lost. There's already a cost of defending those claims.
Follow-up.
Yeah, yes, sir. Do any of your members sell consumer data?
For response.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have not asked that question. But I mean, again, we would want to hold those bad actors accountable if they're selling data without a consumer's knowledge.
Rep. Maggard.
Thank you so much. Question, would the chamber support this bill if the cause of action was removed?
For response.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know, I can't say yes at this point, because there is the issue of the huge compliance costs that we're concerned about for our members. But again, the biggest concern is around the private right of action.
Any further questions? I have a couple questions. So obviously, the Florida Chamber represents some of the largest business interests in the state. So having that as the preface, a lot of these companies that are part of the chamber that you represent, and if anybody out there who represents some of these large companies want to help answer this question along with Ms. Johnson, very large companies. So when we're talking about compliant costs, and I want you to help me out here, I want you to educate me on this. Since most of these companies are already dealing with the European standard, the California standard, and the Virginia standard, and if we are somewhat similar, isn't some of those compliant costs already baked in the cake, baked into their P&Ls?
Am I recognized, Mr. Chair?
You are recognized.
Thank you. Well, first off, the Virginia law hasn't gone into effect yet, so they are working toward compliance. But if you're a regional company, you might not do business in Virginia, and so therefore you would not be complying with the Virginia law.
Well, let's talk about the larger companies, the larger multinational companies. They're surely dealing with California European standards. You're recognized. You don't have to be recognized when I'm talking to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. yes, I will submit that companies will have at least a leg up in compliance if this bill passes. But again, the bills do have some differences, and so therefore there would be some level of compliance costs, but not to the extent that some of the other companies that don't have to comply in other states would have.
And wouldn't it? You know, there was a gentleman come up here talking about, you know, taking 48 hours to remove all of the information and having to pay somebody $50,000 to $75,000 a year for all of, you know, I think he said that it was up to $750,000 worth of year in ongoing regulatory costs. But don't most of these larger companies have chief data officers, chief information officers? They're already prepared to do some of this stuff because they're already complying with it anyway. And just good practices, if you're housing a lot of consumer data, you would have most of that stuff already in place because it's just good business. I mean, doesn't that make sense? Wouldn't there be overlap where regulatory costs maybe are not as high as people are saying it is?
Mr. Chair, to the previous speaker's point about compliance costs, I haven't seen his math, but I will say that a company with $50 million in revenue and 50,000 collection points of consumers or households, they still have to comply with at least the deletion requirements and the other requirements within the bill. So they still would have some level of compliance costs and, you know, not... I mean, a small business could have 50,000, or a small or medium business could have 50,000 consumers and have $50 million in revenue, and still have to at least comply with the other parts of the bill, even if they don't sell their data. They would still have to map the data and understand how that data is used to be able to correct it and do everything else. And they might not have a chief technology officer to do that.
Okay, appreciate it. Teddy Smith. Florida Automobile Dealers Association. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said it so fast, I wasn't sure who I was. I'm Ted Smith. I'm president of the Florida Automobile Dealers Association. And I really want to talk to you about what the size of businesses, you know, when you look at the definitions today in the bill, I guess you'd say we are, all of my dealers are new car franchised automobile dealers. And I guess we're probably large, small businesses in Florida because you know that we're in every community around the state. We certainly don't meet the guidelines. We're not safe under the exemptions that exist in the bill as far as we can see them. I wanted to speak to you this morning simply because there was an exemption last year that had to do with data that we have at the dealership and we send it to our OEMs, whether it's, you know, BMW, Volvo, or Ford Motor Company. And that exemption is not in this current bill. So I wanted to bring that to your attention and tell you that's something we'd certainly like to see in the bill as it moves forward. The sponsor, Representative McFarland, has been great as well dealing with us on our issues. But I heard her say something this morning that made me want to just pick up my briefcase and go back to the office. And that's, if you don't sell the data, you don't have to be troubled by this legislation. We'd certainly like to be in that situation where we don't have to comply. I can promise you I attended meetings with the folks that do what I do for a living a couple of years ago as California was debating their bill and putting it into place, and I know that that was a real-life example of tremendous compliance costs for the dealers in California. So that's a large concern for us as we go forward. So there's two major parts of this bill, and it's compliance and enforcement. So the compliance is costly, and the enforcement, Mr. Chairman and members, is a concern, we believe, if it's left up to trial lawyers to enforce legislation. We'd like to see that done by the Attorney General. The real issue, because my dealers have been in lawsuits for the 20 years I've represented car dealers in Florida, and if there's a dollar worth of damage, then the problem is the amount of costs that are accumulated when trial lawyers bring suits for damages. So that's our concern, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Adam Bassford, Associated Industries of Florida. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Rep. McFarland, for working for it with us and paying attention to our concerns. Obviously, Associated Industries of Florida is opposed to the legislation as it sits today. You heard a lot about the private cause of action and about the compliance costs, and obviously those are reasons we oppose this bill. But fundamentally, we oppose this bill because it ought to be taken up at the federal level. And sure, we can have that discussion about you are protecting your constituents and working on their behalf, and that's the discussion that we're going to have. You can't control Congress. I wish you could, because you, I'm sure, do a better job than they are in Washington, D.C. these days. I trust you a lot more. But that is where this ought to be legislated. You see, these we just had a long discussion about where an and is or whether this applies or not, and our businesses are working really hard to figure out how to comply with this piece of legislation, the one in California, the one in Virginia, and all of those, and it is complicated. It's a real difficult thing. The compliance costs are there. How do we contemplate those and how do we measure those? That's a very difficult thing, but they are real. And so moving forward, we know that we need to focus our attention at the federal level. And just to remind you of the businesses that we're talking about here in the state of Florida, they're not some ethereal, anonymous group of people. These are the businesses that make Florida great. These are the businesses that employ thousands and thousands of Floridians that have pay property taxes, have huge capital investments in this state. They care about this state. They want to do things the right way. And adding these compliance costs and adding these things when it ought to be done somewhere else is just another cost for them in a already difficult situation. I mean, we're dealing with supply chain issues. We're dealing with, I mean, just coming off of COVID-19 and all of the costs and all the difficulties they're focused there. Now's not the time to increase an additional tax when we ought to do this, where it can be a stable, can be looked at in a comprehensive way at the federal level. So we ask you to join us and work at the federal level to really get a solution to this problem and not create more controversy and more confusion at the state level. And that's our ask. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman. I have a few questions. Thank you for being here.
Yes, sir.
And I'll ask you the same question that I asked before to the chamber. How many of your members sell Floridians' data for targeted advertising?
Mr. Chairman, I'll say there are legitimate reasons for using data. And the companies that we represent do it the right way for the most part. I mean, there are, well, I'll say our members, I know they do it the right way. There are bad actors in this space. I hope I don't represent any of those. But there are bad actors in the space, and that's why legislation is needed at the federal level. So we agree with you there. So let's do this at the federal level. So the selling of data for marketing purposes, that's how business is done. And so we want to make sure that businesses preserve the right and the ability to do that, but do that in the right way.
So for a couple follow-ups?
Yep, four series.
Who are those bad actors?
Response.
There are bad actors that nefariously or purchase information and sell it to all people all over the world. And so with no real rhyme or reason. And so is there a way to regulate those people that are potentially brokers who are potentially that's all they do as a business? Absolutely. And that's why we need a federal response.
Okay. You talk about the cost of litigation, and I agree that there certainly is a cost there. But what about the cost of the consumer or the Floridian who has had their data stolen? Do you agree that those folks should be compensated?
Mr. Bassford.
Thank you. For people who have their data stolen or how did you term that? I'm sorry.
Do you agree that the Floridians that have had their data stolen, or I'll even say have had their data sold, do you agree that those folks should be compensated?
I think there's a very big distinction between having data sold and having your identity stolen. I think that's what we're going toward. And those are very different things. And identity theft is a real problem and should have recourse. Absolutely. Okay.
You talk about the bad actors. What should be the punishment if a business does sell consumer data and is a bad actor in your words?
For response.
Thank you. I believe that should be regulated at the federal level, and all of the parties should come together and do that as a blanket approach across the state. I mean, across the country, to make sure that everybody has a level playing field.
Brett Maggard,
thank you. Please explain to me the federal part again. That concerns me. So we are okay to pay the feds compliance costs and all that, but with the state does it for our own people, we're not.
For response.
Representative, I believe that paying compliance costs for a nationwide approach is much better than doing it on a piecemeal way from state to state.
One more. So you trust the feds more than you trust the state to do that, then?
For a response.
Mr. Chairman, I don't...
I just want to hear the answer.
I don't trust...
that was the point of the question.
I believe I led off by saying I trust you and your committee much more than I do Congress. However, having the benefit of having a nationwide approach to this, where our companies have stability, they have certainty, we prefer that. And we, you know, would rather have Congress actually take a stab at that, at least.
So I'm going to follow. I'm going to piggyback off of that. Was there another question? But before I get to it, just want to piggyback off of that other question. So, this might answer a question you may have. So the absence of the federal government taking action on something like this, where clearly the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution could be utilized for this because all these businesses are doing business across state line. Mm-hmm. But with that preface, we understand the federal government is totally inept, and they're never, ever going to pass anything of substance. So can you see the at least the reasoning of wanting the state of Florida to take action in the absence of the federal government getting off their butts and doing something?
Mr. Chairman, I see that and I appreciate that because I know the Florida legislature wants to do things right for Florida citizens and for Florida's businesses. But what I will tell you is just as confused as we were just a few minutes ago talking about the and or the or, our businesses are going to be continually confused by which regulation trumps which state has a 45-day time and which state has a 90-day time. It's going to be confusing. It's going to be costly. And that's what we're trying to avoid. So, yes, is the federal government inept at all these things? But that's the proper place to be able to deal with something like this that has the least amount of impact on the people that are trying to do things the right way.
Rep. McClure.
Thank you, and I had to step out, so if this has been asked and answered, I can watch the tape, but Do you have any idea how many Florida businesses, excuse me, businesses would be affected by this? I guess we're in the strike all, I hope. How many Florida businesses would be affected by that?
I'm not sure you have that information, do you?
Mr. Chairman, right, I don't have accurate information. Obviously, that number kind of oscillates between, you know, as we go through iterations here, but a significant amount, I'm sure.
Mr. Chair, follow up. So to the extent that there's a significant amount of businesses that would be affected by this, am I clear that that would mean that a significant amount of businesses in the state are selling the private information of the consumers of Florida?
For response.
I'll go back to the way the definitions are here. There are legitimate uses for the buying and selling of data within companies and between companies. And so, yes, companies do buy and sell data in that process. Now, having that data protected against nefarious uses and allowing citizens to be able to say, I don't want my information used this way, those things are well and good, but we need consistency in that. And that's why we're pushing for a federal response.
I think I better stop while I'm ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Rep. Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned that businesses are rebounding from COVID, and we all are. We agree with that. And based on that, you indicated that this is not the time to put in place a law like the one we're considering. In your opinion, when would the right time be?
For response.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the time is not good for now because we know that the compliance cost will increase, and Florida businesses are obviously paying out a lot and have financial difficulties. So having the certainty is what we're looking for. Obviously, there will be compliance costs with any kind of thing. And so whenever we can get the federal response, that's what we're looking for. But today, if we are putting a Band-Aid on this problem with another state solution to add to California, to add to all these other states, that's why I say it's not the time. The time is now for a federal comprehensive solution.
Rep. Thompson.
Thank you. And if the federal government does not put anything in place, when would the right time be for this legislative body to put this law in place?
For response.
Ma'am, I'm not sure exactly how to respond to that. I mean, we will work through the process and make sure that, I mean, our businesses want to do the right thing, and we're going to work through this process. But I believe our time and attention is better spent working at the federal level.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on.
Thank you, sir.
Samantha Padgett, Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. Wave in opposition. Sal, can't pronounce this Italian last name. Oh, Nuzzo. Waiving in opposition. Thank you. Scott Smalley, Florida Retail Federation. Shally, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Thank you, members of the committee. I think some of the earlier dialogue and exchange showed the complexity of the issue, and I admire Representative McFarland for taking this on and having such an open door. I won't even try to go into the deep end of some of these things. I just want to speak to two things that I know, and I'll be very brief because you've heard them. One is it's going to cost our businesses money to implement and comply. There's no question. I will concede, certainly, Mr. Chairman, your point about some are going to have a leg up, some are going to have a head start, but there are regional players and others that there's going to be significant costs. Two is the private right of action, of course. And the exposure to frivolous lawsuits, the one-sided legal fees, creates a tremendous amount of concern for us. Our retailers have been through a pretty challenging couple of years, and I will say that thanks to the leadership here in the legislature and in the executive branch, we're doing pretty good. And I would like to keep that up, and I'd like to see continued progress and not see this burden place where we've seen in the other states the cost that has come with it, and the lawsuits that have come with it. I'll address Representative Lavalle's question right out of the gate. I'm sure we do have members that sell their data. I hope that they do it in a way that discloses that they do that. I don't have a sense of numbers in terms of how many do or even necessarily how many will apply, because some of that is related to how the strike law changes. There's a lot of buzz that there's some very, very positive things about that, but we're in the process of interpretation. And when we talk about compliance costs, and we talk about one of the costs of compliance being interpretation, I think even our own dialogue shows that that's not as clear as it can be, and I'm sure we're going to work towards getting it to as clear as we can be. But it's an enormously complex issue and one that our good players want to comply with. So we look forward to working with the sponsors and with all of you as we go through the process to try to land in a place that's good for the consumer without being unwieldy to our local retailers. So I appreciate the time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. William Large, Florida Justice Reform Institute. I have a feeling I know what part of the bill you're going to hold
right
on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. William Large, President of the Florida Justice Reform Institute. We're here in opposition to subsection 10, lines 622 through 660. That's the private right of action. And that's what our focus is, and that's what we're opposed to in this bill. I want to thank Representative McFarland because she completely changed this bill from last year. And this is a very different direction. The concern we had with last year was that there was a data breach that could lead to class action litigation. That's not the case here. This would lead to individual people who have asked to have their data either deleted or not to be shared to bring individual cases. But the problem with individual cases isn't necessarily the $100 to $750 threshold. It's the attorney's fees fighting over that $100 to $750. I believe that legitimately probably each one of these cases is going to bring about $20,000 in fees to fight over the $100 to $750. What's going to happen is this is going to devolve into professional individual plaintiffs who are going to purposely ask to have their information deleted in 90 days and hope that it's not, or they're going to purposely ask to have their information not shared within 48 hours and hope that it's not, and then get $750, but the real bad actor is going to be the attorney who's going to get their fees paid because this is a one-way attorney's fee provision only for the consumer. So we want to see a prevailing party's attorney's fee provision that applies to both sides, because actually Representative McFarland has put in some really good provisions in the first subsection of the bill, paragraphs A through X, where things do not apply. But will a defendant company fight that if they're looking at having a one-way attorney's fee provision rather than a prevailing party attorney's fee provision? So we want to see a right to cure. We want to see a two-way attorney's fee provision. And likewise, and this has been discussed, the sub-paragraphs 1, 2, and 3, we'd like to see that apply for sub-paragraph Roman numeral 1 and 3, not 2. And if this is the big picture issue here is the bad actors are allegedly the folks that are selling data, make that about what this bill is about. So focus should be on sub-paragraph 3. So for those reasons, we rise in opposition to the bill.
Just real quick, if you're not selling data, then you are exempt under the bill. Is that accurate?
No, sir. If you look at the on lines 187 through 196, there are three provisions that you have to have two of them apply to you. One, you have to be a big company. That's sub-paragraph 1. Two, sub-paragraph 2, annually buys, receives, sells, or shares its personal information of 50,000 or more consumer households and devices for the purpose of targeted advertising in conjunction with third parties or for a purpose that is not listed in subsection 1. And then subsection 1 has the exceptions, which are very valuable, that go through paragraphs A through X. One of them, paragraph G, is an excellent defense in this case. But what is the likelihood that you're going to fight that paragraph G if there is only a one-way attorney's fee provision rather than a two-way attorney fee provision or a prevailing party's attorney's fee provision.
All right, Mr. Large, if you're not selling information for the purposes of targeted ads, if you're not selling for the purpose, then two doesn't apply. Is that accurate? Is that the way you're reading? Because we're reading it different.
No. One and two apply, you could be in that this is applicable to you. And paragraph three is what the bad actors allegedly are doing. And this is what the complaints we've heard. People who derive 50% or more of their global revenues from selling or sharing personal information about consumers, absolutely go after those folks. And that's what this bill should be about. So big companies with paragraph one or paragraph three. So for those reasons, we stand in opposition to the bill.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir. Anthony DeMarco, Florida Bankers Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Thank you, Rep. McFarland, for putting up with me over the last year. We're talking to you about issues. I have enjoyed getting to know Rep. McFarland. I've joked with some people I wish was on a different subject, but I've enjoyed it, and I think we've worked well together talking and had a great rapport. We're standing in opposition as well. To dovetail on what I think Rep. Maggard, you asked a question about the feds, and Mr. Chairman, you did. Banks, and I by the way, I can... And the other thing you've done, Rep. McFarland, is on this issue, you got the credit unions and the banks to agree on something, so that's always good. What I'm about to say, I believe they agree with. I'm going to let them give them the last of right to discredit anything I've said applying to them. But we have a federal law called Gramm-Leach-Bliley. We've had it for roughly 22 years or so. We are examined and regulated on this, every 18 to 36 months, a state or federal regulator, depending on your charter, will come in and as part of their exam, they will look at compliance and they will determine whether or not you're complying with the law. Should you not be, there will be penalties for that. And so we would like to see a full entity level exemption because we think we're already covered in what we're doing. I know there's been some disagreement on the amount of information, but if you take that and dovetail it into the private right of action you've heard talked about, especially one-way attorney's fees. Someone's gonna come in to a bank and they're gonna say, we have this information or what have you, and we're gonna sue you unless you tell us why we shouldn't. And then there's gonna be discovery and everything else. I go back to an example under the Americans with Disability Act, ADA. Banks and other businesses were sued because their web pages were not ADA compliant. There were a lot of out-of-state firms that did this. And they basically said, you pay us X amount of thousands of dollars, we'll tell you how to get your web page ADA compliant. Even though the Department of Justice was supposed to release rules on how to be ADA compliant for your web page, and never did. So this is the kind of thing we're afraid is gonna happen. And like I said, we have robust regulation, examination. We know what we're doing with it. We are handling it, and it's going to be, it's a compliance cost, but more of a liability and legal cost. It's going to be forthcoming. And happy to take any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Sarah Suski. I do not see Sarah in the room waving in opposition. I don't know. Chase Mitchell, CFO, Jimmy Petronis' office. Waving in support. Mr. Ronnie Book.
Wave in opposition on behalf of Flutter Nation and Carpathia Group.
Waving in opposition. Okay, I do not see any further public testimony. Members, we are in debate on the bill as amended. Any debate? Okay. All right, we'll start with you, Gelasaurus.
Thank you, Chairman. This is a worthy effort. Thank you, Representative. I'd like to see it go further in a few places, but I think as far as striking a balance, it's a good job of doing that. So I'm going to be up on it. I would recommend, for what it's worth, I think the attorney from, I think it was Shook Hardy who testified, had a little tiny fix that might be worth doing. Those little fixes are sometimes the best ones. But I'm up on, I'm for it either way. And thank you for tackling this very important issue that will really help the people of this state.
Rep. Daly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative McFarland. You know, for folks that maybe were not on the committee when we saw this bill last year, I had actually worked when I was at Schutz and Bowen on some implementation for our clients when the GDPR had originally gone into effect in the EU. And so I can certainly understand some of the concerns that have been raised, but I also see the value in this legislation. I've also, you know, had the opportunity to work with Representative McFarland last year and discussed it with her this year, reviewed the California version, reviewed the Virginia version. And look, I admit and agree that the ideal situation is a federal solution. And I don't share, Mr. Chair, your disdain for the federal government, so shocking. I'm hoping that they can get it right and should get it right, right? And that is the long-term solution. But my concern today is Floridians' data. And that's what we have control over and a say in, and we're protecting it with this bill. Representative McFarland knows I have a little bit of heartburn still over the private cause of action. I think only to the extent that I don't want to see this become a cottage industry. I don't want people to kind of take advantage of some of the cases and examples that have been given today. But overall, I think this is a step in the right direction. And you know, look, we've heard a lot about cost, and the gentleman that came up and talked about the cost of fighting these things and releasing all of the data, and it's not just a simple click of a button, but let's talk about the other costs. What I didn't hear was, you know, the business community has no problem paying the cost to collect my data, has no problem with the cost of storing my data, has no problem with the cost of protecting my data, but if I want you to delete it, well, that's just too much. So I do take issue with that. And one thing, and luckily nobody said it today because I kind of would have jumped up at it. You know, the argument was made last year and in some of my offline conversations that no one is asking for this. You know, have you gotten a single email from a constituent asking for this? Well, folks, I think that's because, by and large, our constituents, the general consumer, doesn't know the extent to which the business community has their data, how much of their data they have, and in some cases, what they're doing with that data. And as that became clear to me over the last year and a half, 2 years, it's candidly kind of scary. So I don't have an issue here. I think that this is a step in the right direction. And I'm looking forward to supporting it again today and seeing it move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Rep. Maggard.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. McFarland, this has been a labor of love of yours, and we've had many, many conversations, and I'm going to be up on the bill today. But as you've heard, I think the cause of action is something, as a businessman myself, boy, litigation's just tough and costly. Especially on the one way. So I hope we can work something going to the future, but you've done a wonderful job on this, trying to protect our citizens. And I was worried because I almost thought I was going to have to agree with Representative Daly, and then he took a left on me, so I don't have to now. So good job, Rep, and hopefully we can finish this always across the board.
Rep. Rama.
Thank you, Chairman, and Representative McFarland, thank you. You know, helping regulate the data mining and collection of our citizens is definitely very, very important to me, and I'm on board. I'm going to support the bill. I do have some concerns, as I talked to you earlier, you know, off camera, about the private right of action, and really, to me, yeah, bad actors, they need to pay. But I think we need to have a defined cure process. In my tenure here, I've had a great relationship with many plaintiff attorneys, and we have many good ones, but we also have so many abusive ones that have caused a dramatic rise in insurance rates. And as we look at a 40-year high rate of inflation right now, if we create this new cottage industry, which I'm afraid, because there's you can't lose if you file a lawsuit, if you're the plaintiff, and we don't put some type of barrier there or area to cure, businesses will survive, all the big business will survive, but they're just going to have to raise prices because they're going to have to settle lawsuits. And again, the consumer is going to get a $100 damage award, and an attorney we heard may get upwards of $20,000. So if we can work on that cure, you know, I'm willing to help you there, but, you know, I am supportive and looking forward to getting to the finish line.
Rep. Clemens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to congratulate everyone here today for the Haberdasher Day in the Knott Building. I've never seen more $2,000 suits in this chamber in many years, and so congratulations on that. On a lighter note, you know, Big Brother is watching and listening, and I congratulate the author of this bill. It was rough. It was really rough, and she has listened to many of the folks in this audience. I agree with Rep. Rommel that there's some concerns about the cause of action and the cost of that. But I heard a lot of specious arguments against this bill today, and shame on you. Shame on you to come up in front of the dais and try to feed us some of those arguments. It just doesn't make sense. Did you read the bill? Did you read the strike all? And the answer was no. So go back to your folks that are paying you to buy those $2,000 suits and beg their forgiveness and give them some of their money back. That's crazy. This is debate, so I have latitude to say things like that. I heard people say, listen, if you don't collect the data, you don't have to worry about this. And then somebody stands up and says, that's not the point. Gentlemen, that is exactly the point. It reminds me of the story of when you went to the doctor and you said, doctor, it hurts when I do this. And the doctor said, don't do this. If you don't want to come under the rules of protecting consumers' privacy, then don't collect it. Don't sell it. It's easy. It's self-governed. I'm going to be up on this bill today in light of the specious arguments that I've been here 6 years. That was some of the dumbest stuff I've ever heard come before a committee, and I'm embarrassed for you for doing that. Stop it. I call this the Stop Peeping Tom bill. Let that sink in. Companies are peeping in on you. You're allowing them to collect that data, and you're doing it under duress. You see something that pops up on your website, and you go, hey, I'd like to look at that product. Cool. And then they give you the disclosure in four-point font. It's 3 pages long. And in order to see what it is that you found interesting, you've got to say, I accept. Have you ever read those 3 pages? I have. I brought them up during the specious arguments because it was more inviting than listening to people tell stories. It concerns me. It concerns me that the citizens of Florida are being taken advantage of. There are people making money on the citizens of Florida's private information, and there's nothing that you can do about it. And then to have my friends say, we would rather the federal government take care of that. Listen, this is Florida. We don't wait on the federal government for anything. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will relinquish the microphone. I'm happy to support this today. It is in a place that needs a little more work, and I'll be happy to work with the sponsor and with some of my well-dressed friends to make sure that we have a good piece of legislation. Thank you.
Rep. Fabrizio.
Thank you, Chair. There is absolutely a need to make sure that we protect consumer privacy. I don't doubt that at all, and I am up on this bill. I think that we need to get it to a place where it doesn't affect consumer costs. And I think that that's an issue right now. One of the calls that I do get a lot has to do with inflation and inflation caused by things that are occurring outside of the state of Florida. Thankfully, here in Florida, we're doing things correctly. But my concern with this bill is the litigation aspect of it and the compliance requirements are going to likely affect consumer costs. But I'm willing to work with the sponsor. I'm up today, and I think we'll ultimately have a good product. Thank you so much.
Rep. McClure.
Representative Clemens, those were some big words. I'm over here trying to figure out what exactly it was you said, but I think I'm with you. Representative McFarland, you should really contemplate working on a a really technical, heavy bill next year. I think this is a little light for your skill set. I think you've done a great job. I think you've thought about this in a way that all of us should think about it and mine the data, mine the arguments out of the stakeholders, and then put it into a pot and mix it together, and I think that's what you got here. I'm not saying it's a perfect product. I don't think you would say that, knowing you. I have some concerns, as some of my colleagues have said, but they're nowhere close to the concern I have for the consumers of Florida. And so I'm proud to support you and continue. Look, this is a big bill, so if there's anything I can do to help you, I'm all in. But just thank you for your hard work. This has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you.
Members, any further debates? Okay, showing none. Brett McFarlan, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you so much, members, for that thoughtful debate. I think there's been a lot of confusion and misunderstanding for how this works for the average business in Florida, and I might clarify briefly. One of the changes we made in the bill this session versus last session is we put the applicability up front. And right at the beginning of the bill, for those who have your paper in front of you, on line 27, it says if you use your customers' data to market your own services and products to them, this bill does not apply to you. So you can grab your briefcase with Mr. Smith and you can go home and close the book, because the rest of the bill does not apply to you. That section makes it totally clear that you can collect personal information from your consumers to interact and market, again, to your own people, your own customers who have willingly signed up to be there. And I think we all understand we hand over our information in order to receive a good or service. You don't even have to get to the three thresholds for a controller that we got to later in the bill, and you don't have to torture yourself over the and or contraction used. I would be happy to sit down with anyone who is concerned about their company or their association and walk through any legitimate concerns that you might have, because there's a private right of action in this bill, and I fully recognize that that is a heavy tool to wield. And we should get it right. The enforcement that's on page 34 of this bill is so heavy that pages 1 through 33 ought to be perfect, and we have tried very, very hard to get there. Members, I'm not standing before you today waging a war on targeted advertising. I appreciate a well-targeted ad. There is going to be a compliance cost if you are a business that profits off of your consumers. That hurts me as a pro-business member, a pro-business lawmaker. But we are entrusting companies with personal information about us that is so sophisticated that that our digital version of ourselves is more true to who we are than our friends know about us. That's a little bit scary. Some of the things that are in this bill that we've tried to sort of meet businesses halfway in the compliance, you've actually heard them. That point about the 50,000 users that we spent some bit of time on, first I have to say Mr. Sakali has been very instrumental to this bill improving and growing since last session. But those 50K users, it's if you're using that information for targeted advertising. You also mentioned the global opt-out, that thing on maybe your Safari or Chrome browser that every website would have to recognize. We've made that a may, not a shall, because we understand that if you are a small business, it will be difficult for you to react to every different browser that is out there and try to back-end your data to comply. The 48 hours to opt out of your data being sold, it used to be instantaneous, and we've widened it to 48 hours. If a company can start to track you as soon as you arrive on their website, if they can start to track you and sell your information instantaneously, we thought you should be able to also opt out instantaneously, but we've widened it to 45 hours in case your backup servers are in a different time zone. What this legislation seeks to do is draw a line at the point at which my personal information stops being about providing me a good or service and turns into a product itself, sold to the highest bidder, wherever that bidder may be. And beyond that line that this bill draws, we say a person ought to have a voice in what happens to their information. Now is the right time to do this. The only good time to have done this is perhaps 10 years ago when big tech started to show up. Rep. Clemens called it the Peeping Tom Bill. Many of you who I've talked with about this bill have said, data feels creepy. When I get that ad that relates to a conversation I had with a friend or a spouse when I didn't think anyone was listening, that feels creepy. In fact, a number of people on this side of the podium, when they take off their professional hat, will say, yeah, you know, there's some creepy stuff that's happening out there. If I could write a bill that said don't do creepy things, I would, but that's not how you write laws. There will be a compliance cost, but you have the privilege of my personal information. And I hate to tell you, but I value my privacy and I value the privacy of Floridians. So in this case, I'm okay with businesses to have to incur a compliance cost. This bill will put Florida in the forefront of the nation and data privacy protections. Yes, this policy would be better suited for the federal level. Absolutely. So that any company that operates across state lines doesn't have to come up with a patchwork of compliance. Yes, please, federal government, pass this bill. But I will not sleep on Floridians while I wait for the federal government to get it right. We are going to do this now. With your support, we are going to do it this session. I will work with all of you and anyone who has concerns about this bill to make it as strong as we possibly can, because I take our businesses very seriously and I take our privacy very seriously. Thank you, members.
Having closed on a bill, the question now occurs on House Bill 9. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Engolia?
Yes.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Whip McFarland?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Clemens?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Segley?
Yes.
Fabricio? Yes. Geller? Yes. Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure?
Yes.
Nixon? Yes. Nixon? Yes. Umfroy?
Yes.
Plakin? Yes. Placencia?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Schoaf is excused. Thompson? Yes. Tomko?
Yes.
Will Height?
Yes.
The bill passes, sir.
Members, by your vote, show that House Bill 9 reported favorably with committee substitute. Rep. McFarland goes straight into House Bill 1565, Public Records Consumer Data Privacy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the accompanying public records exemption that is attached to the bill that we just spent a couple minutes on.
Having explained the bill, members, any questions of the bill sponsor? Any questions? Showing none. Is there any public testimony? No public testimony. Members, we in debate. In debate on the bill before a show, no debate. You are recognized to close.
Wave close.
Having wave closed, the question now occurs on House Bill 1565. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Engolia?
Yes.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Whip McFarland?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yep.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Clemens?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
DeSegley?
Yes.
Fabricio? Geller? Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure? Nixon? Umfroy? Plakin?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Rommel? Schoaf is excused. Thompson? Tomko?
Yes.
Will Height?
Yes.
Members, by your vote, show that House Bill 1565 reported favorably. Good job, young lady. Members, we're going to move into House Bill 695. by Rep. Stevenson, property insurer reimbursement. You are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Chair Angolia and members. House Bill 695 amends Florida law to allow Florida Hurricane Catastrophe Fund coverage to apply to any authorized insurer that assumes or otherwise provides coverage for policies of an unsound insurer. Currently, the CAT Fund coverage can only transfer to citizens and only after a company has been placed in receivership. Specifically, the bill allows for any authorized insurer to receive the transfer of CAT funds, of CAT fund coverage, pending an agreement by the State Board of Administration. Additionally, it allows this transfer to take place when an insurer is deemed to be in unsound condition, as opposed to only when an insurer is placed into receivership. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Having explained the bill, members, any questions to the bill sponsor? Any questions? Showing none. Do we have any appearance cards? Tasha Carter, Office of Insurance Consumer Advocate. Waiving support. Thank you. Gregory Black, R Street Institute. Waiving in support. Jessica Krause, Office of Insurance Regulation. Waiving in support. Showing no further public testimony. Members, we are in debate. Rep. Fabricio, in debate.
Thank you, Representative, for bringing this good bill. In Florida, we find ourselves currently in a dire situation, and we need to do whatever we can to first rescue and support the admitted carriers in the state, but also we need to take action to make sure that we can attract new capital markets and new carriers to the state of Florida so that we can stabilize rates ultimately. I think this is a very good, important step in the right direction, and I look forward to working with you and others to further these. Thank you so much.
Members, any further debate? Showing none, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank the Office of Insurance Regulation for finding this as one more thing that we can do. There doesn't seem to be one silver bullet, but several actions that we can take. And one of the benefits of this bill, hopefully, will be to provide less disruption to insurers if their insurer becomes troubled. And I close, and I ask for your favorable support.
Having closed on a bill, the question now occurs on House Bill 695. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Angolia?
Yes.
Vice Chair Drake?
Yes.
Republican Committee Whip McFarland?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Silvers?
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Clemens?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Geller?
Yes.
Grieco?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Latvala?
Yes.
Maggard?
Yes.
McClure? Nixon? Omfroy?
Yes.
Blaken?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Schoaf is excused. Thompson? Yes. Tomko?
Yes.
Wilhite?
Yes.
Members, by your vote, show that House Bill 695 reported favorably.
Thank you,
members,
Chairman.
That completes the agenda for today. Showing no further business, Rep. Barnaby moves that we adjourn. Without objection, motion passes. We are adjourned.